Well, good evening. Let's be opening our Bibles tonight. Book of Ruth, chapter 4, please. Book of Ruth, chapter 4. And that's where we're going to be reading from in just a few minutes. You wonder what they're trying to tell you when right before you get to preach, they sing a song called "How Long Has It Been?" Good to be with you tonight. Glad that you're here. If you're visiting with us, we're especially thankful that you are here. And hope that if this is your first time, it won't be your last time. We have a visitor's packet for you. We'd love for you to have that if that's your first time being here with us tonight. In that packet, you'll find some information about the congregation. There's also a visitor's card. On that card, you'll have the opportunity to share with us any questions or comments or concerns you might have. And we would welcome your feedback or any interest or concerns or questions you have about God or about this congregation, about the Bible, whatever it may be. We'd be happy to talk with you, and you just let us know after services. We're glad you're here this evening. Well, tonight we come to the last in our series that we've been doing the past few Sunday evenings on the little book of Ruth. Ruth, of course, sits, the story does, in the dark days of the judges. It's a time of great spiritual darkness among God's people in God's promised land. The story really is even driven. It gets its initial plot point from the fact that there is a physical famine in the land that is starving Elimelech, his wife Naomi, their two sons, that leads them to leave the promised land and go to Moab in the first place. A physical famine that in some ways is the physical counterpart to the spiritual reality of the spiritual famine that's going on among the people of God. Elimelech quickly dies, of course, when he goes to Moab. It's a sad story in many ways, at least at the beginning. Naomi has everything a woman in the ancient world could want. She has a husband, she has two sons, all a woman of that era could desire. And Elimelech chooses to leave the promised land rather than getting or being part of the solution of God's people's spiritual failures. Elimelech chooses to go into sojourn among Moab, a people despised by God, a people whom God has said in the law, nobody to the 10th generation from Moab will stand in my assembly. That doesn't stop Elimelech from going to live among them, though. And he takes his family's salvation, their safety, their security into his own hands. And of course, it all ends so tragically. He dies, the two sons die, and all Naomi is left with is her own life and two Moabite daughters. And so we pick up this evening with the story turning. Of course, we're by this point in the story familiar with what happens after Naomi returns. Of course, she wants a new name. My name is Mara, she says now, bitter, because the Lord has dealt harshly with me. The Lord has not taken care of me. Orpah, one daughter, Moabite daughter-in-law, chooses not to go back. Ruth, however, does. Ruth does, and Ruth has been God's tool to look out for Naomi's well-being. Ruth has been, by providence no less, according to chapter 2, Ruth has been gleaning in the farmland of a near relative. Boaz is his name, and Boaz is a good man. Boaz is a good man. Boaz, by this point in the story, knows who Ruth is and intends to make sure that she, and by taking care of her, by extension, Naomi, are going to be taken care of. He knows about the kinsman redeemer who's closer than he is, and he will not rest until Ruth and Naomi are taken care of. And that brings us to chapter 4, where we're going to pick up this evening. But before we read chapter 4 itself, we need to spend just a moment in Deuteronomy chapter 25. The portion of the law, and we touched on this a little bit last week, just briefly, the portion of the law that pertains directly to what is going on with Boaz, the nearer kinsman redeemer, and the city elders in the gate. It's on the screen, so you don't have to look it up in your own Bibles. You can be ready to read in Ruth chapter 4 in just a moment, because that's not going to be on the screen. But let's read again together what the law says about what people like Boaz and the even nearer kinsman redeemer need to think about doing. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. But if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders and say, "My husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me." Then the elders of his city shall summon him and speak to him. And if he persists and says, I do not desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders, pull his sandal off his foot, and spit in his face. And she shall declare, thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. In Israel his name shall be called the house of him whose sandal is removed. That's the law background for what's about to happen here now in Ruth chapter 4. In the law, what happens? It was very important for heirs to exist. According to God's law and the way God wanted his land, and it was always his land, you only possessed it for a short period of time. It was always God's land. And God wanted every family, as much as was humanly possible, to keep their allotted piece of the promised land, of God's land. And so God basically says, listen, if a man dies without having given birth or having produced a son yet, then his widow, his brother is to take his widow and basically make her his own wife, as it were. But the son that is born to his brother's widow is not his own son. It is his dead brother's son, so that his dead brother's name may continue. And so if I had a brother and he died, I would take his widow, and I would help her to conceive a son so that my brother's name would continue. I would not get my brother's piece of land as an inheritance. I would leave it for the son who technically, biologically, I had produced, but who spiritually, in a sense, was my brother's son, to keep my brother's name going. That was the right thing to do. That was the compassionate and the merciful thing to do. That would, number one, make sure that my brother's widow was taken care of in her old age, because especially if I died eventually, as well, that son would be able to provide. That was God's version of social security in the ancient world. That son could provide for that widow's needs. And his name could continue, and there would be somebody to inherit his piece of the land and keep the family line going. That's what God wanted. That's what God intended. And that's what Boaz, because as we've talked about last week, because Boaz is such a righteous and just man, Boaz wants to make sure that the right things happen for Ruth and Naomi. But especially because he's a righteous man, he wants the man who's right it actually is, the closer kinsman, to have the first opportunity to do for Ruth what needs to be done. And so we pick up in chapter 4 and verse 1. Have your Bible open there? Let's read just a little bit. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. And so he said, turn aside, friend, sit down here. And he took him aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down. And then he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me, that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you. And so he said, I will redeem it. Then Boaz says, on the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. Oh, that changes things. Verse 6, the closest relative says, I cannot redeem it for myself, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Besides, it comes with a mother-in-law named Bitter. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and all that belonged to Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. And all the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman. And so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went in to her. And the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. And then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his hand, or may his name become famous in Israel today." Because remember, by the way, in chapter 1, remember what Naomi says when she comes back to Bethlehem? "God's left me with nothing." Now the women are saying to her, "Oh, no, he hasn't." "May he also," speaking of the Redeemer, "may he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." And then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap, became his nurse. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born in Naomi." And so they named him Obed. And he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now, these are the generations of Perez, who was a son of Judah. So from Judah, we come to Perez. To Perez was born Hezron. To Hezron was born Ram. To Ram, Amminadab. To Amminadab was born Nashon. To Nashon, Salmon. To Salmon was born Boaz. And to Boaz, Obed. And to Obed was born Jesse. And to Jesse, David. And that's how the book ends. A lot of ways, chapter 4 kind of serves as the wrap-up of chapter 3. Remember what we were talking about last week with chapter 3? The whole story at this point in the book, the whole story revolves around good-natured people, people of good character and good hearts and righteousness, good people doing good things the right way. Boaz does everything rightly. He's not going to usurp the closer kinsman redeemer of his right. He'll take care of the business if he needs to, but he's not going to usurp. He could have, but he doesn't. He does everything the right way, and he does it wisely to boot. He could have taken advantage of Ruth, remember last week in chapter 3, when she's spending the night on the threshing floor. He doesn't do that. He even protects Ruth's reputation by making sure that she leaves a group of men before daylight so that her reputation is not sullied. Ruth spends night out in the field with men. That's a horrible reputation in the ancient world. Let's quickly unpack a little bit the story, what happens here in chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1. Boaz pulls the kinsman redeemer, the closest redeemer in the family, aside. "Turn aside, friend," is how most translations put it. "Turn aside, my friend," or "friend," or something like that. And most translations at this point absolutely blow it. Because in Hebrew, the man is referred to as Peloni Almoni. Peloni Almoni, which means nothing, and that's the point. It literally means just so-and-so. He says to so-and-so. Peloni Almoni. It's kind of like helter-skelter in English, or hodgepodge. Nonsense words that are meant to say there's just nothing much there. And that's the point. Because here's the thing. What was this kinsman redeemer really supposed to do? He was supposed to preserve the name of Malon and Elimelech. What does he refuse to do? To preserve the name of Malon and Elimelech by raising up an heir through Ruth. And so in exchange, his name is blotted out in Hebrew, and he's just called Pelomoni Elmoni, so-and-so. He refuses to give his brother a name, and so he has no name in the book. It is purposely blotted out, and most translations miss the little wordplay, the little nonsense words that are actually used in the original, or the significance of the fact. He's just so-and-so. He's just nonsense words. He has no name in Israel, and that he refused to make sure that his close relative's name was continued. What he refused to do for others has now been done for him and done to him in God's book. Because you see, his character is suspect all the way around, right? Number one, let's just think about this for a moment. Bethlehem is a very small village. Bethlehem is not big. Bethlehem is not a major town. Bethlehem is a relatively small village, we'd call it today. And so in all probability, given that everybody knows who everybody else is in Bethlehem, remember what happens at the beginning of the book? When Naomi comes back from Moab, everybody comes out and says, "What happened to you, Naomi?" Because they all know her. Everybody knows everybody in Bethlehem. It's a small village. This Redeemer, in all probability, he knows about the land of Elimelech. And so it's almost as if he has been very quietly all along ignoring his family responsibility as the closest kinsman Redeemer to marry Ruth. Because you see, what happens is, if he can avoid, through levirate marriage, raising up an heir for Ruth, through Ruth, for Malon and Elimelech, if he can avoid doing that, without a descendant in the line of Elimelech, what happens to that land? It comes to him naturally, and he doesn't have to spend a dime. He can get the land anyways, never spend a dime. It will simply become part of his own family inheritance because he is the closest member of the family, and he never has to do a thing. And even now, Boaz, because Boaz is wise and because Boaz is clever and because Boaz knows the character of this man who has refused at this point, even though it's a small village where everybody knows everybody and everybody knows about Naomi and everybody knows about her plight and everybody knows there's no more Elimelech and there's no more Malon and everybody knows about Ruth that she's a virtuous woman. Remember, we've been reading this in the book. Everybody knows about all this. And so Boaz knows his character, that he has not lifted a finger thus far to do anything, even though it is his position in the law of Moses to do these things for these widows and to make sure that the name of that family is continued. Boaz basically says, listen, man, either redeem the land or I'm going to buy it out from under you. And so the man basically says, all right, I'll do it. Yeah, he's going to have to spend a little bit of money, but you know what? He's still got the land. But then Boaz reels him in. But when you redeem the land, guess what comes with it? The widow. And with the widow comes the responsibility. Any child, any son that she has gets that land that you've now redeemed. And now, at this point, where before, as long as it's still just about the land, yeah, it's going to cost me a little bit of money now, but you know what? I still get the land, which is the most valuable thing in the ancient world. He's willing to spend a little bit of the money to get the land. But when he finds out that, in a sense, if Ruth comes with the land, I not only have to buy the land, but I'm not going to get to keep the land because Ruth's son is going to get the land. Now I don't want to do it. If it's all about me and I can have the land and I can keep the land, even if I have to spend a little bit of money to get it, I'll get it. But if you're telling me I have to buy the land and give it back to Ruth's son, who she would have by me, now I'm out. Don't want anything to do with that. And Boaz reels him in publicly, shows everybody what the man's character is really about. If it's about satisfying his greed and then letting him get what he wants, get that piece of land, even at a partial price, then he's all about that. But he does not want to see the family name of Elimelech and Malon continue, especially not when he's having to pay money to buy back their land in the first place and then just give it away to a son that's really, in a sense, not his. Boaz has skillfully exposed the man's character to all of Bethlehem. That's why he's nameless. The house of the man whose sandal is removed. Shame on you. He becomes, in a sense, then the nameless redeemer. The one who refuses to do not just what is in the law, but in a sense what's just human decency. And he's shown to be the greedy man that he really is. I'm only interested in the land. I don't care about Ruth. I don't care about Naomi. I don't care about Elimelech. I don't care about Malon. And now that this man has been shown for what he is, and it's clear that he will not make sure that Ruth is taken care of, that the family's name is preserved, Boaz then, before everybody, says, I will. And Boaz makes a public declaration. Boaz is completely set to do God's will and to follow God's law. And because of that, it's all the more telling than the blessing, verse 11. The blessing then that all the people who are in the court, all the elders, the witnesses, everybody who sees who Boaz is, especially in comparison to the nearer redeemer, who see the type of man Boaz is, he is going to spend his own money to buy back someone else's land to make sure that someone else's son, in a sense, someone else's heir, gets that land. And he's going to do that because it's the right thing to do. Doing the right thing is going to cost him money and time and effort. But it's the right thing to do. And when everybody sees publicly the kind of man Boaz is, especially in comparison to the nameless Peloni Almoni, the nameless so-and-so, who's not even worth a name anymore, everybody says to him, we are witnesses, verse 11. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah. That's a high compliment, because who is Ruth? She's a Moabitess. May she become like one of the matriarchs of Israel, as good as Leah, as good as Rachel. May she become like Rachel and Leah, fertile and producing a whole nation from her, as it were, because they built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah. Listen now. And may you become famous in Bethlehem. May you become famous in Bethlehem. And that's important as well, because in Hebrew, what's actually said there is literally, may you have a name in Bethlehem. Because Boaz does the right thing. May your name be preserved. May your name continue. your name be known. Unlike this kinsman redeemer who refuses to do the right thing, especially when he finds it's going to cost him money and he's going to get nothing himself out of it. May your name be revered, Boaz. May your name be known. And then you know what's absolutely fascinating with how the book ends? The book ends with a genealogy. And you know whose name is in the genealogy instead of Malon? Whose name is there? Boaz. Because Boaz's name is preserved. And Boaz's name is preserved for all of eternity, because then not only does Boaz become the means by which the line of Elimelech and Malon continues on, but who comes out of Boaz's righteous act? David himself. We'll keep going though. Who eventually comes out of David? The Messiah himself. And Boaz's name. May your name become famous in Bethlehem. God says, how about famous for eternity? And we still today speak the name Boaz. And even when you turn to Matthew chapter 1 and you read the genealogy of Jesus, you know whose name is there? It's not Malon. It's Boaz. Because he is the right man at the right time, doing the right things for the right reasons, even though it personally costs him. He's living life. He has no idea where all this is going. He doesn't live to see any of this. He doesn't know about David. He doesn't know about the Messiah and all that's going to come, and how he's going to be part of that. All he's doing, ladies and gentlemen, all he is doing is simply doing what is right. And God can always take somebody who's going to do what is right simply because it's right, with no thought about where it may go or how famous I may become or how it may make me rich or how it may personally benefit me. God is always able to take people who will simply do what is right with no other concerns and make great names for them and do great things through them. It's an amazing story. It's a powerful thing because, again, the righteousness of Boaz ultimately becomes a blessing for everybody. And so because of what Boaz is willing and able to do, Ruth is blessed and Naomi is blessed. Remember how she in chapter 1 is saying to her two Moabite daughter-in-laws as they're journeying back to Bethlehem, she's telling them, go home to your families because, listen, I'm too old. I'm not going to be able to produce a son for you again. I have nothing I can give you. I have nobody I can present you to. You need a husband. You need a house. You don't need me. You need to go home. And yet now, there it is. Who Naomi would never have dreamed it. She's bouncing on her lap. What? That grandson. There he is. Because of Boaz, it's blessing for everybody. It's blessing for Naomi. It's blessing for Ruth, who needed a house and a husband. And Naomi says, listen, Ruth, you come back with me. I just don't see how you're ever going to have a house and a husband. Go home, because there is no house or husband for you in Bethlehem. And God says, watch this. There's a man named Boaz. Let's see what he can do about that. In fact, it's extremely telling how much the epilogue or the end of the book here with Boaz and his righteousness in the gate is designed to parallel the beginning of the book with Naomi and Ruth and Orpah. At the end of the book, here we have Boaz, who first talks to the Redeemer who refuses and then talks to the larger assembly in the gate, and the Redeemer withdraws. At the beginning of the book, Naomi talks to two groups, or two audiences, if you will. She talks to Orpah, she talks to Ruth, and Orpah withdraws. Boaz solves the problem of Ruth's need for a home and a husband, when at the beginning of the book, that was Naomi's biggest concern. Listen, Ruth, if you come home with me, there is no house or husband for you. And what marked Ruth as the righteous woman at the beginning of the book? Your God will become my God. Your people will become my people. Your land will become my land. I will die where you die, and I will be buried there. And what Ruth basically says to Naomi is, you know what? I don't care. There is something special about your God and your land and your place. And so I hear what you're saying, Naomi. If I stick with you, there is no home and there is no husband. But you know what? I'm prepared to forfeit the hope of home and husband when I choose faithfulness to you and faithfulness to your God. And what happens at the end of the book? A woman who had willingly chosen no home and no husband for the sake of being where God is now has a home and now has a husband. And so now here at the end of the book, we have the Almighty God providing for Ruth and providing for Boaz. And in so doing, also providing, ironically, also providing for Elimelech and Malon, who at the beginning of the book tragically tried to provide for themselves by running to Moab, but to no avail. They tried to save their lives in Moab and they died there. And when their widows come home, God provides for them in the land where they should have been all along. And not only that, but in what God now does is he provides for Ruth and Naomi through Boaz, as he, in a sense, provides for Elimelech and Malon by continuing their name. God also provides for Judah and Israel, as through this union, he provides a king. And eventually, because that king produces a Messiah, he provides for the entire world. It's astounding, isn't it? Verse 13 of chapter 4. And so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her. And the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Just like that. Sounds so simple, sounds so easy. All those years of marriage to Malone before, where their wombs were in famine, just like the land was in famine. And now, because it's righteous people doing right things God's way in God's time, just like that, the Lord provides. And Ruth's womb is opened, and a son comes forth. And not just any son. And not just any son. But the greatest king Israel will ever have. And the greatest king Israel ever will ever have comes from a near starving, widowed Moabite who's a woman of faith, who has no hope but says that's okay because that's how God works. And everybody gets blessed as a result. It's all about Ruth. It's ultimately about the providence of God. We've said that throughout this series. There's ultimately a lot in this book that's all about the providence of God and how he works in the world. It's interesting that the only other place that Ruth's name is mentioned in the Bible outside this book comes over 1,000 years later in Matthew's Gospel, in Matthew chapter 1. And of course, what's interesting about Matthew's Gospel is that in Matthew chapter 1, that's the genealogy of Jesus that Matthew gives. And in Matthew's genealogy, not only is Boaz and Ruth mentioned, but so too are other women. Almost as a reminder of how God has always worked providentially to make sure that his purposes are accomplished. For instance, the first woman that's mentioned in Jesus' genealogy in Matthew chapter 1, that's the woman Tamar. Remember Tamar? She was Judah's daughter-in-law, and Judah owed her another son for marriage because her first husband died. It was kind of like warranty in the ancient world. First husband dies, daughter-in-law owes you another one. And Judah, however, won't provide for her another son. And so she eventually basically tricks Judah, deceives him into sleeping with her, and produces a son that way named Perez. Perez, if you're in Ruth chapter 4, Perez is the son of Judah, through whom Boaz comes, through whom David comes, through whom Jesus comes. And so once again, God's providence, people doing odd and even sometimes sinful things, and God still accomplishes his purposes. Rahab is the next woman mentioned in Jesus' genealogy. There's Rahab. And remember her story, right? She's a pagan harlot. A pagan harlot who has seen enough and heard enough about Israel's God to know that she needs to change. And there she is, taking her place in the line of Jesus because of God's providence. Next is Ruth, who we're talking about tonight. After Ruth in Jesus' genealogy comes Bathsheba. Now, there's a woman with a history. She has another husband. Doesn't stop her from having David's baby. And, of course, eventually, through God's providence, Bathsheba gives birth to Solomon. Solomon, of course, is in the line of Jesus. And now we know why Mary and Joseph ultimately are in Bethlehem when Jesus is born. Because it always comes back to Bethlehem. It always comes back to Bethlehem. The story of Jesus starts to get very particular, starting with the story of Ruth, because it gets localized to Bethlehem. And it's always going to come back to Bethlehem from that point forward. The genealogy of Jesus, it's an amazing thing. How God, against all odds in several difficult and challenging situations, he perpetuates the name of the line that will produce his son. He perpetuates the line even though Judah nearly extinguishes the line through his shenanigans in the book of Genesis, and Perez is still born. He continues the line through the days of Rahab. He continues the line through the days of Ruth. He continues the line despite David's sin through the days of Bathsheba. And even now he intervenes. And what's going on with Mary, pregnant but not with Joseph's child. That's all Joseph knows. And God sends the angel to say, "Fear not, Joseph. the child she has is of the Holy Spirit. Don't be afraid to take her as your wife. Because that's how God's providence works, that he perpetuates the name, and he keeps his line going, and he works in the world through common, everyday people like you and I. And it's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating vision of how God's providence works in the world. It's good news for us. It's very good news for us. The good news is that anybody can be forgiven, and anybody can be used by God, because listen, you're not going to out-sin the grandmas of Jesus. Just look at that list. But that's how God works. God works providence. The thing I love about the book of Ruth, the thing I absolutely love about the book of Ruth, is that none of these people who are making these decisions and weighing what's righteous and what's selfish, what I should do and what I want to do, none of the people, Ruth, Boaz, none of these people know where this story is going. In other words, they're having to live like you and I do with no real knowledge of the future or how my life may impact God's plan. But I'm simply going to choose to do what's right because it's right. That's the thing I love about them. They don't know they're making history in the moment, do they? They have no idea that what they're doing in that field outside of Bethlehem, they have no idea that's going to change the course of history because that's how God's going to get the Messiah into the world eventually. They have no idea they're making history. They have no idea they're changing the world. They have no idea they're being tools in the hand of God. All they're doing from where they stand and where they live is simply serving God by doing what they know is right. Ruth says, I want your God to be my God. And Boaz says, I want to do what's just and right. And so if the man who ought to take care of you won't, I will. They live the way you and I have to live. And I like that. Because it reminds me how important it is to not worry about the consequences, not worry about where things may go, to not worry about how things may or may not work out, but to simply do what's right because it's right and let God's providence take it from there. That's the power of this story in Ruth. And not only is it important just on that level, but the decisions of the people in these stories that we've been reading about the past several weeks, where they are doing selfless acts of faithfulness toward each other. That has implications not only for their own personal situations, their own personal stories, what happens in their own lives, but it has implications for all Israel as well. Their integrity, their loyalty, their law-keeping, their love of God and love of neighbor. All this bears fruit for all of Israel and literally even into eternity itself. Because then what you begin to realize as you go to the end of the book of Ruth and as you read that genealogy, each name in that genealogy represents an entire lifetime of living in God's providence. Each person living their life and making decisions that God can then use to accomplish his purposes. Each name in that genealogy represents an entire lifetime of living in God's providence and God's providence ensuring that his purposes in the world are accomplished. And so even though at the beginning Naomi is just absolutely convinced that God is done with her, has nothing for her, and has failed her, the rest of the book spends its text and its pages correcting that notion. God is very much at work in this story and in all of life. The genealogy demonstrates how God superintends his plan and his work. The goal towards which the story moves in one sense at this point is just David. You want to know where David came from? It's an interesting story. Let me tell you about it. But then what David goes on to do is serve as part of the link in the genealogy of Judah to Christ. And so the implications for the Christian who reads this genealogy and Ruth are ultimately found in Christ, the ultimate David. When common people, just like you or I, because in their own day and their own time, it was just Boaz and Ruth, two people trying to get through life as best they can. When common people, like you and I, live God's values towards each other in accordance with God's standards and God's ways, and leave the results, not according to what we want, but according to what God wills, great things can happen. And so the book ends by reminding us not only is a family preserved, but But also, God, even in their own lives, can reward those who live according to his purposes. Great things happen for the whole world because of what Boaz and Ruth do, because of who they are and how they act. But the world itself is saved, literally, as well. And Israel's two greatest kings, one on the literal throne of David, one on the spiritual throne, Israel's two greatest kings, in God's providence, come from a small town, nearly lost to a famine, from a family nearly lost to death. And the question you and I need to ponder as we go back out into our lives this week is, how are you and I living in God's providence? You recognize God's still very much at work in the world today? His gospel is still going forth. He's still calling people in the kingdom of his Son. He's still summoning people to join the church. He's still very much at work in the world, accomplishing his purposes until the end comes. But you and I have to live like Boaz and Ruth do. We don't know the end of our story yet. We're just called to live in this moment in God's way, God's values. You ready to go back into the world and do that this week? Do what's right regardless of the consequences simply because it's right? That's all Boaz wanted to do. Hope you do too. You're here this evening, you're a child of God, or not a child of God. We want to encourage you to get right with God. This evening, if you need to come forward and confess that Jesus is the Son of God, made in the flesh through the family of David, but God made flesh. And because of that reality, he was able to offer himself the perfect sacrifice for our sins so that we could be forgiven. You want to come forward this evening and confess that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Repent of your sins. We can baptize you for the forgiveness of those sins. You're here this evening, you're a child of God already, but your life has not been one committed to God's values. You recognize all too well that you have fallen short of living God's ways in the world. Pray to God for forgiveness, so however you feel them. We'll pray with you and for you. We'll help you in every way we can, encourage you however we can. But just share your spiritual needs with us right now while we stand, while we sing.